you know any places any Sega nerds hang out around here?
If you need your Sega fix, all you gotta know is this. There's a podcast that exists for the Sega nerds. Come and get your Sega news and your classic game reviews. And there's fun and features too from the Sega nerds. They've got Chris and they've got Graham, and there's Nathan now and then. It's like hanging with your friends with the Sega nerds. They're not fanboys, but they're nerds. You should listen to
Hello and welcome to the Sega Nerdcast episode 18. I'm Chris, the editor of Sega Nerds, and with me this week we have Graham.
Hello.
And independent developer extraordinaire Christian Whitehead joins us. How's it going, Christian?
Yeah, not too shabby, thank you.
No, thanks for being here. We've been wanting to get you on the show for a very long time, so we're both really excited to have you on.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to have a really great show for everyone today. As always, we're going to get into a little bit about what we've been up to this week, hit our mailbag / feedback from last week, get into the newsstand. There's actually quite a bit of good Sega stuff to talk about, a little bit of community stuff. Then we're going to get into an interview with Christian where we're going to talk about how we got into game development, how we got into working with Sega with some of the Sonic games and porting those over to mobile devices. And what's going to be, I guess, in his future in game development. It's going to be exciting stuff. Then we'll talk a little bit about what we've been playing and get into the question of the week. So first of all, though, I'd like to see what you guys have been up to. So Christian, can you kick us off and tell us what you've been up to this week and kind of what you've been doing?
Well, it was actually my birthday this weekend.
All right.
Hey. So,
yeah, happy birthday. Went out over the weekend, so that was good. And apart from that, I've had, like game-wise, I've like just picked up DuckTales Remastered.
Nice.
And I'm like literally 15 minutes into the game, so I haven't made up my mind on, like, I know it was like a very polarizing kind of game so far, in as far as like the reviews it's got. Some people really love it, and some people are kind of like, some of the reviews have been like 5 out of 10, and
oof.
So yeah, I don't know, it was like $15, and like if it was 10, I would have jumped in straight away, but I like just kept seeing like different people's views on it, and eventually I just bit the bullet and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give it a try.
I read the Polygon review. Actually, I don't normally read reviews on video games. I just, it's one of those things, I just don't do a lot. But I did read that one for whatever reason, and I saw that they did give it I think it was like a 5 or 6 out of 10 or something like that. And one of the biggest complaints was that it stayed almost like too true to the original game and didn't fix some of the issues in the original game. But a lot of fans of the original game, they're kind of happy about that. They liked and enjoy the Capcom did stay true to the original while kind of updating the graphics and some of the other stuff about the game. So I don't know if you've kind of noticed that so early in your playtime with it, but one thing I'm sure you probably still have the theme song stuck in your head right now, don't you?
Yeah, well, it's I haven't actually played the NES original, so I guess that could either be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on, like, I don't have any preconceptions of, like, what this game is meant to be like. I'll probably go and play the NES game after this, though, just to, like, see how, like, whether or not, like, they wanted to get, like, the, you know, like, the movement of the characters, like, literally, like, one-to-one with, like, the NES.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think some people were talking about, like, I know the pogo stick, they've got, like, there's an option for, like, hard pogo or normal pogo, and, like, if you do the hard pogo, you've got to hold down I think you've got to hold down and then press the pogo button. And then it's like a really minor difference, but it's like they put that in so people who played the original can like stick with like the hardcore like DuckTales experience.
That's funny. I actually remember that. One of the things, I think it's going to be interesting to kind of have you talk about this, because this is one of the things that I saw some of the commenters say in that review. So from a developer's standpoint, and put yourself in that and kind of answer this question, do you think someone, a reviewer who's going and reviewing a game, one of these kind of like updated releases from a classic game, do you think that they should go back and play that original game first before they play and then review the updated version, or do you think they should just kind of play it and stand it alone, let it stand on its own merits and not play the original game?
Well, I would say, like, if it was me, right, I would play the remake first, just so I got, like, a fresh view of the game, and so you could say that, like, it was unbiased. But then I would definitely go back and play the original, because that would give you, like, a lot of, like, insight as to, like, why they might have made certain decisions.
Very cool. Yeah, I actually agree. I think that's what we plan on doing with Castle of Illusions coming out here pretty soon. So that's going to be interesting. Really quick, did you want to say what did you get for your birthday? I'm kind of interested. I always like to hear birthday present stories.
I got a new electric shaver.
Yeah,
it's a very like adult thing to get, but I needed one. So
your face looks great right now.
Yeah. Smooth as a baby's bosom. Like it.
I got this really sickly Mexican
yesterday, so it's like second day shave.
Nice.
My old one was like terrible.
I had a really bad one and it just pulled the hairs out of my face.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. I'm usually the kind of person that like only shave like twice a week because I like having a bit of stubble, but like every time I use the old one, it was just like so much pain. Like,
yeah.
When it went over like a certain area of my chin, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't do this. So
weird.
Yeah.
New shaver by coincidence, like, I've got my shaver right next to me, but it's actually a head shaver, but I use it on my beard as well. Cause it just, every beard trim I've used, just like Chris has, pulls my beard out. So I use a head shaver now. It's brilliant. Yeah. Little bit of advice to anyone there. It works.
Pro tip from Graham.
Word.
All right, Graham, what have you been up to?
Not much. Right, I'm looking at my little. I got my little notes here. To be honest, not much. I did do a British military fitness training thing last Monday, which is basically like an intense workout for an hour. They got a guy like sort of yelling at you, telling you to do stuff, and like there's a big group of you, and there's like you're sent to three different categories, like rubbish, okay, and really good. And I was in the rubbish section because I was terrible, so unfit. And I kid you not, I was nearly in tears at the end of it. I'm so unfit, it's unbelievable. Like after like 10 minutes of jogging around, I wanted to stop, and I had like 50 more minutes left to go, and like I was sweating so much, I was almost like I could barely stand up. I was like, and just at the end of it, like the last 5 minutes, we just do a warm down, and I had to do stretches, like, you know, sort of hold your arm up like that, or do that, or stand on one foot or something, like stretch. And I physically couldn't do that, like, for my art. I was just like, and it's just, yeah. So I might go again tomorrow. Let's see what happens.
It can only get better from here, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. There was like people who were like my age, and then there's like sort of middle-aged people, and then there's like a 60-year-old woman, and she was like kicking my ass, basically. She was like, we had to do like runs and stuff, and she was just like, la 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 la. I was like, and she's just like, yeah, it gets better. It's really good. I'm like, yes, I might go again, but yeah, I was like one of the worst things I've ever done. Yeah,
awesome.
And the only other thing I've really done is I started watching Legend of the Seeker on Netflix. It's I think it came out like 2008, so it's not even that new a show. But
it sounds familiar. What was it about?
It's actually based on a book, but it's about this guy who basically there's like it's basically a fantasy sort of adventure thing, and there's an evil guy who's gonna like trying to rule the world or something. And it's like these magical barriers that's splitting the world into three parts or something. And this kid who is prophesied to be like the savior was taken across the barrier when he was young or something. And then someone's like come and found him like 23 years later, and they're trying to like fulfill this prophecy. It sounds shit, but it's really good. I can't explain it.
You sold me on it. I have to watch it now.
There you go. Yeah,
sounds intriguing.
The characters are great in it. Even though it's it's clearly not like as violent as Lord as Game of Thrones or something like that, or like Spartacus or anything. I think it's like a family adventure, but it's still kind of violent. And like there's a lot of deaths in it and stuff. And yeah, I've been enjoying it. I think in the last 2 days I've watched 22 episodes or something.
Jesus.
Yeah, I've had a bit of a binge on that. So yeah, that's pretty much it. So Chris, what have you been doing?
I just got back from a family trip up to New York City. We took the Jamie and I took the kids up there to do a little bit like school clothes shopping and stuff. And I have to say, that is the craziest place on earth. It was the second time I've been in New York City. But I mean, if you think of New York City and all the crazy stuff that happens there, it all happened within like the 8 hours that we were there. We went into Times Square, and there were literally just naked women with body paint on, like, walking around taking photos with the people. They were, like, completely naked, and the only things they had on were literally just body paint. And what was really funny was this black guy was going up and talking to one of these girls, and he had, like, his four-year-old son right there with him, like, just talking. And his son was just, like, staring up at her, like, tits, just, like, his mouth all wide open, like... and then we were walking, kind of down the sidewalk. We're waiting on the light to turn green for us to walk across. And all of a sudden, this taxi cab comes shooting through the intersection, but it has sirens blaring. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like a cop siren. And all of a sudden, it screeches to a halt behind this car, and all these dudes jump out, and they have guns. And we're like, oh, my God, what's happening? And they open up the door. And they have the guns pointed at some guy. I guess they're undercover cops. And they, like, bust this guy, this like, young kid. They yank him out. They have all their guns on him and stuff. And the craziest thing ever. So, like, I was, like, trying to take pictures and stuff while Jamie was, like, trying to take the kids, like, keep them safe. Like, I was at the front. And then I saw this guy. I'm going to share this picture with you guys.
Oh, I think I saw this.
Really
yeah.
quickly. It's great. This guy was standing on the street corner, and he's dressed all up in, like, some weird, like, Catholic priest outfit, but he was doing, like, kung fu moves in the middle of the intersection, and he saw me taking pictures, and he did this pose for me, and, like, he was just doing all this crazy stuff. He was pretty awesome, I have to say.
Yeah, I love, like, crazy religious people. They just, like, brighten your day when you're walking in the city.
I know, there are a lot...
more fun than, like, serious ones.
Oh, absolutely. It was just a lot of stuff like that. Man, it was crazy. The food was really good. We went into Central Park for a while and kind of walked around there. We just had a really good time. It was pretty awesome. We ended up taking a megabus up there. It was about, like, $50 a person, so it was pretty cheap. And it was great. They had, like, a bathroom on the bus that you could go use if you want. They had Wi-Fi. Everything was really cool. Wow. So, yeah, really good deal and everything.
You have Megabus over there as well. We've got it over here,
kind of new, yeah. Megabus is fairly new.
Has it got really smiley face on the side, like, dude? Like,
yeah, no, because remember you, I think we saw one when you were here, and you're like, oh, my God, Megabus!
Yes! Really yeah, two pictures of it. I got so excited. It's like, they exist over there. Oh, my God. Yeah, now I remember. Oh, wow. yeah. Because they're over here, they're just really cheap and horrible. Like the worst things. But I love them. They seem so happy. There's a little dude on the side. Yay.
And then the other thing I ended up, I don't know if I should admit this or not, but I went and I've been reading some of the Sonic comic books. I see, like, a lot of people posting on it on Twitter and stuff, so I'm like, all right, I want to see what all the fuss is about and stuff. So I talked to some people, and they said starting at around, like, issue 218 was a good starting point. So I started there reading some of that, and then I picked up the latest issue, which is 251. And this is the last part. It's part 12 of 12 in the Sonic / Mega Man series that's been going on. So I saw how it wrapped up. I didn't see any of the other ones, but I don't know. It's kind of cool, I guess. I'm not huge into it or whatever, but anyway, that's pretty
yeah.
Much.
Actually, back when I was like a lot younger, my mum used to like go to the city and get me like Sonic comics, and like this was back it would have been like issue like 20 something. So it was like way different from what I like see now. It's like, it was basically just like that Saturday morning cartoon, where it was like you had Robotnik, you know, in his like, it was a totally different outfit. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, there was like Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, and I think it's referred to as Sat AM by the fans. And so it was basically all those characters in the comic, and I remember reading it, and like in Australia, like, well, I guess like with the in the 90s in general, like there just wasn't really a whole lot like pointed out about Sonic's story, like especially in Australia. And so it was like so confusing to me, like, because I played the games and like Dr. Robotnik looked different to how he did in the comic, and I was just like, what's this? And I was like, oh, you love Sonic, I got this for you. And I'm like, oh, cool. And so I started reading it for a bit, and then yeah, like I remember like years later on the internet I looked it up, and like just like finding out some of the like stories and stuff that were in it, I'm just like, whoa, this is like crazy, man. Like, yeah. It was like all these like high school love stories or something in it, and then like Dr. Robotnik was replaced by like Robo Robotnik. Is that right?
I don't know.
You should look it up, man.
I don't know.
So it's got like this tumultuous history, and I think after the Mega Man crossover, it's going to kind of be like yeah, it's starting with 251. I think it's probably going to be like refreshed again with like slightly different looks for all the characters and like probably a new setting and everything. So
I guess it was like some sort of like lawsuit going around, and so some of the characters that have been in there, like I guess one of the is his name Ken Penders, I think it is, left Archie Comics, and so he had a big lawsuit going on with them. TSS Z News actually covered it really well, so if you want to look more about it, you can check it out there, but I kind of brushed up on the whole thing. So I guess essentially he was able to take some of the characters that he created, and he's going to create a new comic book with them. So after 251, I think some of the other characters that you've seen in the series aren't going to be there any longer. But like Christian, like you
yeah,
said...
Yeah, there was like all these echidnas, or like there was an echidna race or something, because like in the games, like Knuckles is the only... he's like the last of his kind, but in the comics, I remember there was like Julie Sue or something, which is like his girlfriend. And then like he was like a... yeah, like he had his like extended family, but they like disappeared on purpose, so he was by himself. It was like really crazy. It was like Days of Our Lives stuff.
I know. I feel kind of weird as like a grown man reading some of these, because like you said, it's very like high school, like romantic type stuff. Like Sonic's like kissing other people, and it's just they're going on dates and stuff. It's really weird.
Oh my god.
I kind of keep them hidden, almost. Like, I don't let anyone else see that I have them. They're kind of like old. Yeah.
Like my old, porn like... on display, but you keep your Sonic comics exactly. Like, tucked away.
Absolutely.
I've still got my old ones in a folder somewhere, because I figure they years down the track, they might be worth something. You know, the early ones.
Right, yeah. That's funny. Awesome. Enough talk about Sonic, the comic. I think we spent way too much on that. So let's get into, actually, before we get into some news, we'll do some episode feedback really quickly. Friend of the show, Lincoln Fiasco, he had this to say about last week. Last week's show was when we had Stephen Frost on. He's the Sega producer. If you guys haven't listened or watched the show, I definitely suggest you do it. But he said, a great podcast as always. It was cool hearing your work history and your path to Sega, what he was saying actually to Stephen Frost. So that was really awesome. And thanks again to Stephen for coming on to the show. Now let's get on to some news, Graham. You want to take
us? Yeah, we can do this, yeah. Okay, a bit of bad news, I guess, for Wii U and Yakuza fans, really. It looks like Yakuza 1 and 2 HD pack that was released on Wii U over there recently has really bombed in Japan. According to Dengenki sales charts, the game couldn't even get into the top 50 over there. and it was outside by Battlefield 3, which only managed to, that in itself only managed to do 1,878 sales. And like the Battlefield games aren't like, they're not as big in like Japan as they are over here, for example, and the fact that Yakuza won a great game that's normally sold quite well in Japan, it hasn't done very well over there for this is pretty shocking. Although there is one thing, they didn't technically have a full week on the shelves before the sales numbers were reported, so potentially it might go up, but I doubt it go up by much more than that.
Right.
It's a bit of a weird one because, I guess it's one of those things that people would love to see a Yakuza 1 and 2 HD release, but being on the Wii U, which hasn't in itself done as well as other, like the PS2 was one of the best selling console of all time, and the games did really well on that, but on the Wii U, not so much. I mean, you guys got any thoughts on this?
I'm looking at that weird ad on our site right now. It looks like Avatar people having sex.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the IM... Is it the IMVU thing?
Yeah, what the hell is that?
That thing's been around for years, but they keep changing the looks of the characters. I keep seeing adverts for it everywhere.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, I think this is one of those Google ad type things.
Before we get into, I guess, what else we've been, or our thoughts on this, I did want to read this comment by Ken's Redemption, because I think it's probably the funniest comment we've had on the site ever. He wrote, "I really wanted to see a complete Yakuza collection on the Wii U because I'm so damn sick and tired of the goddamn trophy list looming over me like a nagging wife telling me what I still have to do. It's a great game, a great franchise, and was more than worthy to share with other Japanese consoles that could do justice instead of having it be confined to cult status. Bring this stateside, and the rest of those yuppie hipster idiots will finally shut their damn traps." So,
nice.
So I read that the other day and kind of laughed at it. But I would like to actually kind of get your opinion on that, Christian. Do you have any idea, you know, why you think this game may have struggled on its release over there?
Well, I guess, like, first thing, I'm not sure, like, I have no idea, like, how big the marketing was. I think I remember seeing, like, a really crazy ad for it. You guys were, I don't know if you saw it. It was this guy, this guy was it's a Japanese ad where the guy's at home with his daughter and he's meant to be babysitting her or something, and he's like playing he's in the hostess bar on like the Wii U screen, and because his daughter changes the TV channel and they're meant to like, they're basically showcasing the gamepad controller because he's playing on that, and then like his wife comes up behind him and sees him like playing the game and like hits him on the head or something.
Oh, I think I did see that actually, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I've paraphrased that correctly, but it was something funny like that. So I don't know beyond that, like how much they've been like pushing, like marketing wise, to get awareness of it. But I mean, just Wii U in general has, you know, not been the smoothest sailing console of this generation by any means.
Exactly.
Because I think Ubisoft was talking about Zombie U, and like that just totally did not meet their expectations sales wise. So, you know, they're not continuing that franchise in any way. At least that's what they said, or Marcel said. I guess like the Wii U has a bit of a confusing message at the moment, you know, because it's a lot of the games that are on it are like, you know, really appealing to the core audience. Like, you know, you've got Bayonetta 2, mm-hmm. Yakuza, Smash Brothers coming up, and so there's a lot of games that would like are appealing to me, but I think. Like, personally, like, I haven't got a Wii U just because it hasn't really compelled me to get the hardware. Like,
exactly.
You know, for the price it's selling at, it doesn't really do anything that my, you know, my 360 can't do, or, you know, my PC can't do.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a you know, apart from the gamepad, but that's, I can do that stuff, you know, with my iPad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there isn't really anything that, like, that makes the gamepad, like, a must-have.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with the Wii, it was more like, because that was the first motion controller thing, it was something that, you know, was really appealing to, you know, like, the casual market, like, older people, younger people, you know, who are outside that kind of, like, teenage demographic that, you know, publishers usually go for.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, that you've hit the nail on the head there, I think, really, with why a lot of people haven't really gone for it, because, yeah, as you say, there's nothing that unique about the system now, and it's underpowered. They've got PS4 and the Xbox One coming out soon, so I guess people might be waiting out on that to see how well they do, or how, you know, before they probably actually commit to any one of them.
I think, like, especially... when, like, the Wii itself was still, like, the only thing holding back the Wii in people's minds were the fact that it couldn't do HD. I think that's really the only thing that that you could say stopped them from being able to continue putting games on the Wii.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I remember when the Wii U was first being, like, announced or launched or something, they're like, yeah, it's full HD and stuff. They're, like, really touting how it's full HD. And I just remember, I think it was Kotaku, someone said, yeah, but the PS3 and Xbox 360 have been HD as well for like 5 years, so this is not big news. Like, why are they bringing it up? It seems like Nintendo trying to, I don't know, they're trying to like boast about things that have already been done and stuff. It's not news anymore, really, with the Wii U.
Yeah, one of the things that probably should be noted with Yakuza 1 and 2, though, on the Wii U, is that there was actually a release of the same game on the PS3, I think back in November in Japan. So this game's actually been released before, you know, a while back ago. And so that could contribute to the reason why it didn't sell very well. You know, I don't know exactly what that is. So it could be a combination of the three things that we kind of talked about. Christian, you brought up, you know, marketing could had a reason in it. And the fact that, you know, people have played these games, you know, two or three times now, you know, with the original games, with the release on PS3, and now on Wii U. And then also the fact that just not a lot of people have a Wii U. So, you know, you're going to get, you know, the lower install base you have, you're going to have a lower percentage of sales with that. So,
yeah.
It's just crazy that I would never have thought that with how popular the Yakuza franchise is in Japan, that it would do less than 1,800 units. We don't know exactly what it is, but we know it's less than 1,800 because the 50th game in that top 50 list did that number. And it was essentially they had 4 days to sell it, so they couldn't even get you know, over basically 1,900 copies in 4 days, which is just crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah, moving on then. Sega has finally given us like a release date and price of Castle of Illusion, so we're excited about that. It will be released September the 3rd on PlayStation Network, September the 4th on Xbox Live and PC, and it'll cost $15 on the platforms. Well, it says on both platforms there, I guess. Whatever that equates to in Xbox Live points.
I think it's 1,200 Microsoft points or whatever.
Nice.
But those are going away here soon as well. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're getting rid of those, aren't they? Yeah. I think 1,200 points over here is about £10 or something. So for any UK distance, it's about £10 roughly. which I guess is about standard price now for full like Xbox Live Arcade or PSN release now. Oh yeah, and they actually talked about some pre-order bonuses as well. PSN users who pre-order the game between August 20th and September 2nd will receive a digital version of the Genesis original, a dynamic theme, and three avatars, which is pretty cool. Is there no pre-order bonus for the Xbox version then? Or
that's what's weird, because you would think that there would be, but I was...
What's the beef, Sega? Come on.
I know. I was looking at the press release when they sent it to us, and it wasn't on there. So,
man, okay, so potentially not one for Xbox users, no bonus for them, but that's going to suck. because I've got an Xbox.
I'll read it verbatim from the Sega press release.
Okay,
for a limited time only, customers in North America who pre-order Castle Illusion on PlayStation Network from August 20th to September 2nd will receive the original Genesis version, one pre-order exclusive Dynamic Dream, and three avatars. Customers will be able to download the original game immediately after pre-ordering. So there's no mention of it for any other platform. So,
Actually, just double check, because I don't have a PlayStation 3. I don't know about this, but can you pre-order games on PlayStation Network normally? Is there like a...
Yes, option? You can.
Okay, that could be it, because I don't think there's one for that on the Xbox 360, or at least I've never seen one before a game's been released.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So that could be why, yeah, you physically can't pre-order a game on the Xbox 360. But I'd imagine PC you can. For Steam, I know you can pre-order games, so that's weird, but okay, yeah. Yeah, so there's a little bit of information there. September 3rd, PlayStation Network. September 4th, Xbox Live and PC. So yeah, stay tuned. We'll no doubt have a review up as soon as possible. And as Chris sort of... actually, did you mention it on air? I can't remember off air. We were talking about having a look back at the original one and doing...
It was on air, yeah, because it was after Christian was talking to us about DuckTales.
Yes, thank you. I can't remember if that was off air or not, yeah. So yeah, stay tuned. We'll hope you have some good stuff about that when it comes out. And there's another bit of Yakuza news. Sega has effectively announced a new Yakuza title. Very little is known about it so far. It was sort of released, sort of brought up in the latest edition of Famitsu, the Japanese gaming magazine. It's been titled Yakuza Ishin, I think, or Ishin. I think that's how we pronounce it. Yeah. And so far, we literally know very little about it, except there's that image there, and there's also a logo as well, which is there, basically. There has been indicated that it could be set in like feudal Japan, a bit like Yakuza Kenzan, which was like the spin-off title that was the first Yakuza game released on the PS3, which never actually made it to the West. So there's also some doubt about whether this one will actually make it to the West as well, considering Yakuza 5 hasn't made it over here as well yet. So it's kind of interesting that, I guess even though Sega hasn't got round to Yakuza 5 coming out over here and we're still waiting on it, they've announced a new title, and by all accounts it's sort of in development already if they've announced it with the screenshots and stuff. Platform is unconfirmed as well, but best guesses so far obviously like the PS4. There's someone who actually mentioned on NeoGAF actually sort of talking about how because there was Yakuza Kenzan, which I just mentioned, and that was, as I say, that was the first PS3 title. They said that, okay, I don't know how true this is, but they were talking about how Sega hinted that, because people didn't know if it was going to be PS2 or PS3, Sega hinted that it was going to be PS3 in that title, because Kenzan, San is actually 3 in Japanese, and in Ishin, she is 4 in Japanese. So Yakuza Ishin, they're guessing that it's going to be for PS4. I would probably say it would be PS4 anyway, off the top of my head, but yeah. Yeah, that's enough of my rambling there. What do you guys think? Sorry.
I don't know. I don't really have... I didn't even read this before you put it on there. So I know I remember hearing that they were going to announce... they were going to have some sort of Yakuza announcement. A lot of people got excited hoping that it was going to be something related to Yakuza 5 coming stateside. No, I knew it wasn't going to be that. I think I said that last week. But yeah, I mean, it's just great that they're continuing the Yakuza franchise. It would be interesting to see if this is a PlayStation 4 game, because I believe that would then be the first next-gen game that Sega has announced that they're having development. I don't think there's been any next-gen games currently so far. I'm sure Christian probably knows them all, but he's probably not at liberty to say.
Yeah, I don't think that would go down.
we won't even broach that subject then. So, yeah. And then I think the last bit of news, and we'll run through this on really quickly, Graham. I can run through it if you don't mind. Basically, Sega put out some information on what they're going to be doing at Gamescom, which is going to be taking place pretty soon, actually. When is it? August 20th, is it? Let me see. Yeah, August 22nd through the 25th. So they're going to have several playable games there, Sonic Lost World, obviously. But one of the cool things about it is going to be at the Nintendo of Europe booth. It's going to have new playable levels, a new trailer, and some exclusive screenshots. So people who are going there, it sounds like you're going to be able to play some levels that have never been playable before in any of the demos, so that'll be cool. They're also going to have Total War Rome 2 there, as well as The Cave, the mobile version of that. And what's kind of neat, though, they're going to be doing, they're partnering with, I guess, Gamescom and a couple other companies, and they're going to be doing a thing called the Cologne big indie pitch. So they're opening up the floor to indie developers and allowing them to pitch ideas to a panel of judges. And I guess they're going to vote on those games, the one that sounds the best. It doesn't really say what prizes they're going to get or anything like that, or maybe it does. But so that'll be kind of interesting, I guess. But have you ever been to Gamescom, Graham or Christian?
No, but I was actually contacted by another games company who I interviewed a while back for BitLoaders, and they were talking about meeting up and like chatting and stuff. I'm like, I'm not going. I didn't actually get tickets, so I really wish I did. So yeah, I'm thinking like maybe next year or at some point I'm going to look at actually getting to go, because it's a pretty big one in Europe now. Yeah, I just need to sort out money and stuff and work out if I can actually go. But yeah, yeah.
You ever been at Gamescom, Christian, before?
No, I'd like to. I've been to E3 about 3 times now, so
awesome.
It'd be good to do something a bit different. Because I've been to Europe once before, but that was years ago when I was a lot younger. It'd be nice to visit Germany and just, like, see the games there and just, like, see the town as well. It's usually like, because for me at the moment, like when I'm, you know, developing game, like when I'm in a dev cycle, like I'll be pretty much like shacked up week after week just working on the game. So like I usually like take my time off when, you know, a game's been released. Luckily Sonic 1 was out before E3, so, you know, I had plenty of time to just take some time off, go visit the States and, you know, have a bit of a break. So, yeah, I'd love to do that with Gamescom in the future.
That'd be awesome.
Maybe I'll see you there then. Maybe.
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, I'd love it if I had something to show there. Like,
yeah.
Well, for one, because that means like I can be flown out for something. Otherwise it's like me just like paying to look at games. It's like I've already seen all the games that are in development at E3. So
true.
It's kind of like not a reason to do it again.
Maybe you need to make a new game engine for like Shenmue or something. Get Sega's fly out for that.
That a bit later, actually.
If
you want. There's a few things going on with Retro Engine.
Cool. But, yeah, we'll talk about that in the interview, definitely. Yeah. So moving on to community news now, Chris, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Okay. As some of you know, Sonic Boom happened in America. I can't remember when it was now. Was it last week or the week before?
I think it was like one of those.
Recently. and basically, there have been some fans who've decided to make Sonic Boom West. So it's actually like, it's not official. There we go. Our friends at Radio Sega posted up because actually one of the DJs, Sonic Remix at Radio Sega, he has actually sort of. He's collaborating with some other Sonic fans to actually bring the Sonic convention to the west of the United States. So in a way, it's kind of almost like what happened with Summer of Sonic in the UK. It started originally as just a group of fans sort of getting together and sort of working it out. They're saying that this is it's going to be held last. Where is it?
What are you looking for?
Oh yeah, it's going to take place Saturday, September the 14th at Dave and Buster's in Orange, California. Yeah, and they're saying it's going to be quite a small event. It's not going to be as big as Sonic Boom, because Sonic Boom is actually an official Sega event, really. And Summer of Sonic in the UK, even though it was started by fans, it has been, like, Sega collaborates with them, and it's pretty massive now, as you, most of the fans of the show should know, because we've been talking about it the last few weeks. So yeah, they're saying it's going to be a small gathering, and they hope to expand it next year, make it a yearly event. They might hopefully get some proper backing from Sega as well, because I'm not sure if they've actually got that yet. But they've already got confirmed screenings of Sonic Paradox's Metropolis Mayhem and some other Sonic Shorts Volume 8. Yeah, Sonic Paradox, they do some pretty funny little cartoons of Sonic the Hedgehog, which they always show at Summer of Sonic and Sonic Boom as well. So yeah, it's a little bit of stuff. So if you're out on the west coast of America and you weren't able to get to Sonic Boom this year, then there's a little gathering that's happening there. So if you go out to radiosega.net, they've actually got more information on how you can actually get there and all the information on that. So yeah, pretty exciting. Good stuff. You guys got anything to add to that at all? Or?
No, I know it. A lot of people were talking about that. I guess the Sonic Boom in St. Louis didn't do very well attendance wise. There just wasn't a lot of people out there. I think it's good that people are taking it, I guess, upon themselves to create a Sega / Sonic event close to them, because it can be tough, especially if you're on the West Coast traveling all the way to Missouri to attend an event.
Yeah.
And even on the East Coast, for me, I mean, I'm on the East Coast, I'm in Maryland, and I think it was still going to be like an 8-hour drive for me to make it to Missouri. You know, United States is a gigantic country, so...
Yeah, I remember someone saying, I can't remember where it was, it might have been on the Sonic Stadium forums or the Sega forum or something, how it was easier for them or quicker for them to get to Summer of Sonic in the UK than it was for them to drive to Sonic Boom or something like that. It was kind of ridiculous. They're like, yeah, although it would cost them more, but they're sort of saying, yeah, it's just as easy for us to go over to the UK to go to their thing. So, yeah, I guess that's the problem with America. It's so big that... Like if you got to find good locations to have these things.
Exactly.
The UK is pretty small, but yeah.
I think it'd be cool for them to have one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, at some point during the year. I think
a bit like PAX then, really. Make into the new PAX.
Yeah. And you guys need to start one in Australia too, Christian.
Yeah. That'd be... I know there's... I don't know his name, but there's one guy in Australia that... the original guy, Sven Jocelyn.
Yeah.
I think he knows him quite well. And,
God, what's he called? Is
Jerry.
He an artist normally? Is he? Do you know if he's an artist, this guy?
Cause there's
there's a guy who keeps coming to Summer of Sonic, or I don't know if he went like this year, but yeah, he's an artist. He's really good.
He's from Australia. Though, yeah.
I've met him a couple of times. Oh. I literally can't remember his name now. But he's really awesome. He's really fun. Is he thinking of starting something or?
I was just about to say like he would be the candidate to
start
an Australian arm with it. I think.
We should try and get in touch with him and see if he'd be up for that. He's a good guy. Yeah, so yeah, that'd be good.
Awesome. Elson Wong, is it?
Yes. Is he called like Fast Feet? Is he nicknamed Fast Feet or something? Elson Fast Feet or
something speedy.
Something to do with being quick. Oh god. Yeah, Elson Wong. Awesome.
Wow. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for the community stuff.
Yeah.
Now let's get into our chat with Christian and talk a little bit about some of the work that you've done with Sega. Christian. So, first off, can you start by starting at the beginning of your, kind of video game development career? Can you talk to us about why you decided to get into game development and, what your interests were and how that kind of evolved?
Yeah, well, I guess, if we want to, start from the very, very beginning.
Sure.
I was, 12 years old and... I didn't start Sonic CD. That But basically, I think what got me interested in making games to begin with was, like, my parents got me a Mac, which, you know, isn't extraordinary on its own, but, like, basically, as a kid growing up, like, I had no experience with computers before that. And so I went to my friend's house, and they're like, oh, you know, they've got all these awesome DOS games, and then they gave it to me on floppy disk, put it in the Mac, doesn't work. And, like, as many people know, it's like, back then, Macs didn't really have any of the big name games on PC at the time. Like, so as a kid, I was just like, oh, this sucks. Like, I can't play any of the good games. But it came with, like, a shareware disk of, like, 500 games. And they're all, like, these weird, kooky games that, like, independent people have been doing themselves. And I was like, oh, you know, I want to make something that's more, like, you know, what was on the Mega Drive. Because, like, the Mega Drive was the first thing I had that was, like, for games. Mm-hmm. And, like, so the games on the Mac were nothing like the games on the Mega Drive. And I was like, oh, I want to make games like the Mega Drive. And, you know, then eventually there was this program called Click and Play, which is, like, one of the first, like, games creation tools for people who don't know how to program. And so, like, I eagerly bought that with my birthday money when I was 12 years old. And, you know, disappointingly, it didn't have, like, the ability to make side-scrollers at the time. So, I, like, but, you know, eventually I managed to work around that, like, by moving everything, all the objects except the player on the screen, so, like, it kind of faked the scrolling.
And that's brilliant.
And what I used to do, like, my friend at the time, we just used to, if he stayed the night at my place, we used to, like, make really shitty games in, like, it's basically the equivalent of a games jam, like, nowadays, where it's like, all right, we've got, like, you know, 12 hours, let's make a game. And, like, we just came up, like, we just give them, like, totally ridiculous names. Like, there was one, we made this, like, car, like, it was, like, not quite a racing game, not quite a fighting game. And, like, you had two cars on the screen, one with, like, a jet cannon and another one with, like, a machine gun. And, they're, like, the only thing, like, we remember about that game was, like, it was from the top down. And, like, okay. There was a ramp, and, like, when you drove over the ramp, the car would go, like that, on the screen.
That's pretty cool.
And, like, we were so impressed with that effect at the time, because we were just like, oh, my God, it's, like, leaping out into the screen. And then, like, my second game was, like, called Space Cows. And the story behind that was, like, I was still in primary school. And, like, I told everyone in my class that I could make games, and they're like, oh, you can't make games, Christian. And luckily we had a Mac in the classroom because it was, like, educational. And I'm like, oh, yes, I can. I bet you I can come back tomorrow with a game. And they're like, okay, make a game about cows in space. And, like, so I came back the next day, and it was just, like, a really crappy clone of Space Invaders, but it had, like, these cows that were going like this on the screen, like, just drawn in, like, MS Paint, the equivalent of MS Paint. And so, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun memories doing that. And then, like, I kind of got into doing, like, a lot of hobbyist stuff. Like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with, like, Retro Sonic. That was, like, it was, like, a fan game that I was working on for years, just, like, in spare time, like, when I was teaching myself how to program. I was like, well, you know, I really like Sonic, and, you know, I'd like to make my own game, because, you know, I used to draw pictures of levels as a kid of, like, you know, what levels I wanted to play after Sonic 3 and Knuckles, like, because that was the last game, and there was, like, no other games after that.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
So, yeah, I was really enthusiastic about, like, making my own, and, like, so for the longest time, like, it turned into, like, a burden at the end, though, because, like, I said to everyone, oh, I'm going to make this full game on the internet, and, like, so I'd committed myself to do it, and, like, really, by the time I was in school, like, secondary school, like, moving into university and that, like, I really, like, didn't have time for it, but, like, I was like, no, I have to finish this, But then, because I wasn't even thinking of working in games as a career until, the kind of digital explosion of downloadable titles, because that just, I really hated the idea of, having to work in, be a cog in a machine of, a massive studio. And, and also just growing up, everything was based in the US. And at the time, that just seemed like another world to me as a kid. It's we don't have, Australian game development, which, I mean, it's not true. We did, but, as a kid, you just didn't hear about it. And with, the whole, digital download games and the app stores and everything, I think, before this job, this stuff, I was working, in media production. So, I was kind of more interested in doing, video clips. I wanted to do video clips for bands and stuff. That was, my high school dream. But then, I guess, Sonic CD started when I downloaded Sonic 1 from the App Store and played it. And, it was, the emulated version. And, to be honest, I was I could totally, kick this game's ass with a better version. And I looked it up and, found out it was done, they had contracted, an independent guy in Texas, who had worked in other studios and that. And so I thought, I naively thought, if they hired one guy to do that, then why can't they hire me? And so, that weekend, I was all right, I'm just going to put together a demo of Sonic CD in a month. And I picked Sonic CD because I figured it was a game that they couldn't emulate easily. So, and it was one that also, it had, cutscenes, audio quality soundtrack, CD audio soundtracks, I mean. And so I thought it was something that would, impress them a lot more than just trying to do Sonic 2.
Right.
Or, something that they thought, because if I presented that to them, I figured they would probably go oh, well, we can just emulate Sonic 2. Why would we pay you to painstakingly remake the code?
Sure.
That's smart.
But, so I guess the next step of that was I put together a pitch video, and, I contacted, the European division of Sega, and I got an email back saying, oh, thank you for your proposal, but it was probably just a generic reply. And then just luckily the Sega of America had posted on their blog what games this was to their audience, what games would you like to see on iOS. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to put my video right there so people can see it.
Oh.
And, soon enough, they got everyone saying, oh, you should get Christian Wido to do Sonic CD. Because it's it's right here. It's working. It's, really smooth. Nice. It looks awesome. And that was interesting because, the legal department at Sega were oh, shit, what's this? if someone's using our IP without our permission, it's alert, alert. I don't know if you're familiar with Kevin Eber. He was then working at Sega in Sega Europe, and he contacted me and he's like, oh, Christian, you've succeeded. Everyone's got your you've got everyone's attention, but you need to take that down now, son. Because you're about to get some lawyers on your ass.
No.
But, thankfully, there was some really great, there was one guy who was working at Sega at the time who was a really cool dude, and, he got in touch with me after seeing, at SOA, he had seen the video and that. And, I mean, it took a long time to build that relationship just because, they had no idea who I was, what my credentials were. And, so I guess I can't really go into, what the procedure is at Sega, but just, with any kind of third-party publisher, you've got to, go through the legal processes and,
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, like, I guess one thing that was in my favor was I was already established as a, like, as an independent business because I'd been working in media production. So it wasn't like I wasn't just coming to them as like, oh, I'm this fan and I want to make your game. It was like, well, you know, I'm an independent company and, you know, you can look up my previous work. Even, you know, admittedly, it's not games, but it's still programming work.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of still related. So, and just, I was just lucky that they were willing to take the chance on me, you know, and really, I think we've had a great working relationship so far. So,
yeah,
I think it's turned out really well.
Yeah, I think the fans are lucky that they took the chance on you, actually, because your versions, I think, are, everyone can admit, are better than like what Sega originally put out for like on the iPhone and stuff. So yeah, I think we're all grateful that you actually took the chance, man, because that's awesome. Just like, especially
it's
the...
really funny because it was such a gung-ho decision. Like, I thought, you know, I'll put together one level demo. If they don't accept it, well, you know, no big deal. I'll go on and make my own games. But yeah, it sort of steered me on like a totally different path.
One thing that I'd like to know is, like, what do your friends and family think of you doing this now? I mean, I'm sure a lot of your friends are really familiar with the Sonic games, and now, you know, they, you know you. You're actually coming out and, you know, making these games, and in a lot of ways, you know, sometimes making them even better than the originals. So what is kind of the, I guess, the feedback and some of the things that your friends and family have said?
Oh, well, it's funny, like... I guess my parents didn't really, like, they knew that I was really into Sonic as a kid. So, yeah, I think they were really proud just to, you know, see, like, because when they asked me what I was doing that month, and I'm like, oh, and, you know, I'm just putting together a pitch for, you know, Sega, and they're like, what? Why would you do that? Like, you know, you should continue doing your regular job. You need to earn money. And, but I'm like, oh, you know, I'll be right. I reckon, because especially like there was this long period of time before like the initial prototype demo and actually getting the go, like the green light to do it. And, you know, I was in that time, I was still working my existing, like just sticking with media production stuff. And, I guess there was the question of like, you know, is it going to happen or not? And I just thought, oh, well, you know, I'll just keep working. You know, I kept kind of doing a bit more on it in my spare time just to offset, you know, the less I had to do once the green, you know, once it was green lit, the better in my eyes. Because, yeah, I think with Sonic CD, there was a lot of stuff, like, I learned just in terms of, like, working with a publisher and, like, what kind of development cycle they expect. Because, I mean, up until that point, like, I'd never, like, had anyone QAing any of my stuff, which, you know, like, doing bug testing.
Yeah, right.
You know, I had maybe, like, people give me feedback on demos I did of, like, the hobby games, like Retro Sonic and that. But, I mean, I was just lucky that, like, I'm a fairly diligent person in terms of, like, you know, wanting things to be like of a decent standard. But even so, it's like, you know, you might think, oh, you know, games don't need a lot of bug testing. Like, this will be easy to do. And it's like, no, you need like, you need plenty, you need all the bug testing you can get. Like, because like Sonic CD, it's like, you know, there were thousands of bugs, and it's not because, you know, it was badly programmed or anything. It's just because, like, the type of game Sonic CD is with time travel and all the different level maps, it's just, like, there's so many different ways, like, Sonic can get stuck in walls from, like, time travel. that we, you know, they're just, like, you have to test all that stuff. And I'm sure, like, some of the, like, really dedicated fans of, like, Sonic Retro, like, they set up a thread where they're like, oh, we're finding all the bugs in your game. And, like, you know, by the time the game had come out, I'm, like, at the point where I'm, like, I just get, like, really surprised when people say, like, oh, this is a really great game because, like, in my mind, all I'm thinking of is, like, all the bugs that are still, like, left in the game that, like, you know, when it was published to like Xbox Live Arcade, I'm like, I already know all the bugs that are still in this game, and so I can't accept it. Like, but, I mean, it's like, I forget who said this, but like, someone said, you know, like, art is never completed, it's just abandoned. And that's pretty much what games are. It's like, you can never totally finish a game, like, or get all the bugs out of it. You can basically just get it to the point where it's like, yeah, I'm happy enough of that.
Yeah.
And I want to work on something different. So you just have to leave it behind. You know, I don't think we've got Sonic CD, like, you know, we patched it a few times on iOS and Android just to, like, get, like, iOS was patched recently, so it had, like, the 16:9 aspect ratio of the iPhone 5, I think, yeah.
Hmm. So I've actually got it on the Windows phone. That's my the version I've got.
Oh, so. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
He's the one Windows phone owner in the UK, so...
I was trying to wonder. I think this was patched. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Oh shit! That's louder than I thought it was gonna be. Sorry. actually, it doesn't tell me that the version number is on this.
Do you remember offhand like how many bugs from the original Sonic CD game that you actually fixed in porting it? Is that something you can address or say?
I think like offhand, like there's a lot of things in Sonic CD, like. Some of the platforms, like, this is getting into really nitpicky territory, but, like, some of the movements of the platforms in the original game weren't synchronized with, like, the player's collision. Like, so you'd notice, like, on one frame, like, the platform would overlap with Sonic's shoe. And so, like, I fixed all those tiny things because I was like, oh, you know, it shouldn't be like that. And then there was, like, I think the Metallic Madness stage in the second zone, the background scrolled in the opposite direction than it should have. Oh. Or at least, like, the parallax didn't, like, the depth of field with the parallax didn't look as it should. So, like, there was a lot of these minor things that, like, were changed. And, I mean, like, that's not to say that... you know, put down the original programmers in any way because,
right.
I mean, you know, Sonic, for us to even port Sonic CD in the first place, you know, it's a pretty amazing game in its own right. So,
yeah.
And, you know, like, I certainly don't want to come across as, like, taking credit for the original creation of the game. Like, you know, it's more like we just love the game so much that we want to present it in the best light possible.
Well said. Yeah, it's definitely a good kind of, I guess, attitude and kind of a thought process to go through. Can you talk a little bit about the development of the retro engine that you created? Is that something that you created before and when you were actually working on that pitch with or for Sonic CD?
Yeah, well, basically again, like the name Retro Engine came from like Retro Sonic, and like basically it was never really meant to be like a. Originally, it was just meant to be for Sonic, but you know, it basically as it started off as a hobby thing, and it got developed to the point where it's like, well, now it's got so many features and. Capabilities like the scripting engine in it for one started off as something very rudimentary, and now it's like at the point where you can create like it's essentially like the retro engine is basically meant to be like a pretend console from the 16-bit/32-bit era.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Like, the type of games, like, that would max it out as it's designed now is, like, you know, it's basically designed to go up as far as, like, some of the, like, highly detailed 2D platformers on the Saturn.
Okay.
So, if you think of, like...
Clockwork
Knights, Estelle, some of the more obscure ones, like, you know, Cotton Boomerang, like a lot of those shooters.
Oh, but
side-scrolling shooters. Silhouette Mirage, which is like one of my favorite treasure games. So, you know, just like games that have like a lot of crazy like scaling effects with the pixel art and stuff. And because all this stuff is basically, you know, from when I was growing up and seeing the like effects in those games, and I was just like, oh, I want an engine that has all of that stuff. You know, like where you see like the heat wave rippling on the tiles and rotating the whole screen and all that kind of fun stuff.
Awesome. So we know that all the work that you've done on the Sonic games up to this point. There's been a lot of talk about Sonic 2 being in development or anything like that. Can you talk to us about that at all?
Nothing's been confirmed, so I can't say more than that. I mean, there was some comments made by like an Android publication earlier this year, and you can either take their word for it, like what was said there, but I'm definitely keeping busy as on that front, but you'll have to wait for Sega to make any official announcements regarding like when such a game might come out.
I see.
Right. Okay. just out of curiosity, for the Windows Phone, like obviously I just mentioned,
here we go,
I've seen, yeah, I always been talking to anyone about mobile games. Well, basically, Sonic CD came out on the Windows Phone, and actually, I think it won an award as well, like for one, a couple of websites.
Yeah, we got the Pocket Gamer Windows Phone Game of the Year, which is probably more of a reflection on like the dearth of games on Windows Phone rather than the quality of Sonic CD.
Windows Phone's got great games, okay? Maybe three, maybe five great games, but they're great anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we're still really happy that we got it, so very proud.
Yeah, like, as far as I can tell, like, all the reviews I've seen of the Windows Phone version, it seems, I don't know how well it's actually sold, but, like, is there any chance that, like, the Sonic 1 port that came to iOS and Android, would that come to Windows Phone at all, do you know?
I think it's, you know, it's definitely possible, because, I mean, like, with other platforms and stuff, like, I guess as a developer, like, I'm really lucky because, like, my engine, like, I get to test out these games on all the platforms that I have in the house. Like, you know, I've got, you know, I get to play Sonic 1 on my PC, my Mac, my Xbox 360 dev kit, all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, making an actual release, that's kind of, like, because they've got to allocate like testing and go through submission processes and all that stuff. So it's really like, you know, if Sega wants to do that, you know, they'll probably come to me and just say, oh, can you sort that out? Because, I mean, you know, that's pretty much like with Sonic CD, you know, that recently came out on the Ouya.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was just kind of like spur of the moment, like sorting that out. Like, in terms of when I heard about it, so...
okay.
Yeah, like, it could happen in the future, but I'm not the one that makes those decisions,
right,
so...
Right, okay. Well, fingers crossed,
because... wait and see. Like, I guess when people ask me that on Twitter and stuff, like, all I can say is, well, you know, if you want it for that platform, just, like, let Sega know, and, you know, it's up to them, really. But if they see a lot of people asking for it, then... it's possible.
Yeah, true. Actually, you just mentioned something that I should have actually asked earlier, I guess. How much like actual involvement did Sega have in like the releases of Sonic 1 and Sonic CD? Like, you just sort of said then that they would say to you, can you just sort of sort this out in a way? Like, was it literally you creating, like developing the game or porting the game across or what have you? Or did they have a whole team that you worked with on it?
Well, with like Sonic CD, that was like at the time that was basically myself that did all the porting, except for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, like those consoles, they had SOE had already you know, they had a team, which you'll see on the splash screen, Blitz Software.
Okay.
And so they were already in charge of, like, bringing Sonic CD to those platforms. And in the case of Sonic CD, it's like, well, you know, I work with them, like, just providing them with the work that was done on the mobile version, and then they brought it to the console. So, yeah, I didn't really have a lot of involvement with, in terms of testing on those consoles. Or, and I guess another factor there too was, like, because I was like basically a fresh developer for them, you know, they needed someone who was already been, like, proven on the consoles to, you know...
Sure.
Because we had a tight schedule, like, you know, everything had to launch simultaneously, so, you know, you need the extra manpower to make sure that it was ready for submission.
Yeah.
On, because, like, just apart, you know, separate to the game, there's, like, a lot of requirements to consoles and stuff, like, you know, having the ESR... Was it, like, ESRB logo for ratings and... It's like all this minor stuff that, like, if you don't have it in the game, it won't be approved.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I think they just wanted to have, like, the backup there with someone who, like, wasn't going to miss any of that stuff. But, yeah, in terms of the core game, like, it was pretty much just the conversion was just done by myself. And, you know, Sonic Team's obviously a big part of just, like, approving, like, overseeing the whole project and making sure that it, like, conforms with what they want. You know, because as the IP holder, like, you know, they have the final say over everything that you do. You know, and rightly so, because it's their baby, essentially.
Yeah.
And with Sonic 1, I worked with another programmer, Simon Tomley. Because, yeah, I just found, like, after Sonic 1, that was such an, basically an epic in terms of, like, the amount of stuff I programmed, like, it just, like, it was just such an adventure to do that, but I didn't want to have to do that for every single game.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like, you've got to be realistic and say, well, you know, we need more, people helping you to actually make stuff happen on a realistic timescale. So, yeah, like, Simon, I've been the lead programmer on Sonic 1, and Simon has been working to, like, help with the conversion of, like, just getting the original content in from Sonic 1 and, you know, like, also tweaking stuff to, you know, when we make, like, little improvements and additions and stuff. But, yeah, I'm a bit of a jack-of-all-trades. Like, you know, we... you know, there was the Sonic 1 soundtrack was, the quality of the soundtrack was improved. You know, we, that was done by, you know, putting it into a digital audio workspace and, like, mixing all the tracks, instead of just, like, recording the output from, like, a Mega Drive or, like, an emulator, we actually, had all the individual instrument tracks as FM instruments in, like, with FM synthesis, like, plugins on the workspace, and then, like, rendered out, like, mixed and mastered the tracks and rendered them out as, you know, the audio files that way, which, it's funny, like, I don't know how many people would notice the difference in quality, but it was just, like, it was just something that we thought we could do to, make the game sound, like, as crisp as possible.
Yeah,
I think you've got to wear headphones to really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think the iPhone speaker, even though it's good, I don't think you get a full. Because I did actually play with headphones on, and I did actually I could hear the difference in that. But yeah, that's awesome.
You mentioned a little bit about bringing Sonic CD recently to the Oya, and I think that's actually the most recent release that any of these games have had. What is your opinion on the Oya as a platform and as a device for, you know, indie developers to kind of have a home to, you know, to be able to put their games on aside from either PC or the consoles?
I think it's a good start, but it needs work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, you know, they certainly started off something that a lot of other companies are wanting to chase. Like Amazon, I think I read that Amazon are kind of designing their own console, and then there's like the Mad Catz console and Game Stick. So there's a lot of other Android consoles kind of chasing that market.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess one advantage for them is they've got a head start. But,
right.
You know, as it stands now, like, they're missing a lot of, like, key features, like, you know, achievements and leaderboards. And the purchasing system isn't that great yet because, like, you don't see at the moment, because every game essentially has to be free to try. Or free, like, it has to have a free component, you don't actually see the price tag in the store.
Okay.
Until you actually download the game. So I think that's a bit of an issue. Like, you know, in the case of Sonic CD, right, it's a 300 megabyte file, and, you know, some of these games might be a couple of gigs.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes, like, the price tag will, like, let you know if it's something that you're even going to consider or not.
Yeah.
Because if it's like a $15 game, you're like, oh, well, is it something I really know a lot about? And if it's not, then the $15 would probably turn you off. But, yeah, I think, like, and as a developer, it's pretty, like, simple stuff. It's just, like, it's just a variation on Android. So it was very easy to get it to work on Ouya.
Yeah.
Which I guess is to their credit, but I guess talking from a nerdy perspective, like, I just don't really, I'm not really impressed because it's Android. Like, the whole, like, as a programmer, what you love about consoles is the fact that it's like a unique piece of hardware that's only made, like one of the first consoles I ever programmed for was the Dreamcast, not officially, but just like, for homebrew, and there's a version of Retro Sonic that was done for Dreamcast.
Oh, is there? Oh my god! I need to find that.
It's not that great. Like, you know, I'm, you know, the Sonic physics in my older games nowhere near as good as what they are now. But, you know, like, it still works on Dreamcast. So that, like, that was just an amazing achievement for me at the time.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the feeling you get when you have something, it's like, that was originally the domain of something, like, you would buy the games, you would never make your own and play it on the console. So I think, yeah, it's easier than ever now to get stuff on consoles, you know, which is a great thing. But I think in terms of, like, performance, like, on the Ouya, it's not like a piece of hardware that, like, you know, crazy programming boffins can, like, squeeze insane, like, effects from, like you could, like, with, you know, like, the Amiga demo scene or stuff like that, where it was, like, a unique piece of hardware and they got to know it intimately and they could do, you know, unexpected things with it. Whereas, like, on the Ouya, it's like, well, you pretty much got to keep it as compatible as possible because it will be based on the Android version, which needs to run on, like, you know, potentially thousands of different handsets.
Yeah. And,
you know, like, even just, like, doing Sonic 1 on Android, like, it's just crazy, like, what some of the different Android devices can end up making your game run, like, really slowly for no reason. And, like, I get emails from people saying, oh, you know, this runs like shit on my Nexus, like, Nexus 10 or 7 or something. And so, you know, we have to track down that device and test it on there and just work out what the hell is going on and then release, like, an update to... But it's just impossible to get it perfect on every single Android device. So, yeah, I'm a big old-school fan of consoles that are where it's just, like, guaranteed to be that one piece of hardware and you can just, like, fine-tune it to the maximum and just, like, it's going to run perfectly.
Yeah,
but, I mean, you know, that's not a kind of realistic expectation these days, though, with, like, everything's multi-platform and available on everything. And, I mean, that's just the way you've got to design things.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, kind of moving forward, where do you see yourself, you know, kind of after you're done with some of the Sonic games? Do you looking to create some of your own original games, like maybe like a Space Cals 2 or something like that? Or like...
Well, like, in the very long term, I've had this idea in my head. Like, I was actually, like, the beginnings of this idea was, like, on, like, in my sketchbook before I'd even started Sonic CD, and I was considering starting this game. But it's, I know, it's been, like, it's such a battle with, like, when you have, like, a grand plan for, like, your magnum opus game, mm-hmm. like, quite often you have to, like, strip it back several times to actually make it into a, especially, you know, if it's going to be a downloadable title and needs to be, like, a lot simpler than what you initially think it's going to be, because otherwise you'll be embarking on, like, a 10-year epic to make a game that people might think is bad anyway. But, like, so in the long-term future, I would like to make that game.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, it's just a really zany idea. And I like, some of my best ideas come from, like, just when you intentionally write down something stupid and then you make it work into something.
Can you tell us anything about it, or do you want to keep it kind of under wraps?
It's a bit under wraps.
Okay.
Like, because it could change. Like, it's hard to describe because it has changed a lot. Just in terms, like, originally it was going to be some, like, a retro 2D style thing, but, like, now it's not. Because, like, I think, you know, in the near future, you know, you'll probably see some more retro engine stuff. But in the long term, I actually like developing, like, new engine stuff. So it'd be more like modern graphics and, but still, like, I don't like realistic graphics, but I just like the idea of using more horsepower to do more interesting kind of...
Right.
Like, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, non-photo realistic rendering, so, you know, like Jet Set Radio.
Oh, yeah.
Dragon's Crown's probably a good example of that, too, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Do you reckon you might... Because Sega, like... we actually spoke very briefly about this off-air, but... like, you were effectively, like, the original sort of, as far as we can tell, the original indie developer to work with Sega. And since that, since, like, your original work on Sonic CD, Sega sort of created their own department focusing on indie developers, and they released Jack Lumber, which I think is their only game so far. Would you reckon you might actually go to Sega for, like, future titles at all? Like, as an indie developer?
I think, it's definitely a possibility if they're interested. I mean, you know, again, I can't say anything that, like, obviously, like, as a developer, I'm in contact with them a lot. So,
yeah.
You know, we speak about a lot of stuff, you know, and just, like, throwing ideas back and forth on what can be, you know, what could be an interesting thing to pursue. But, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I would love to do... something with, like, an existing Sega IP if I got the chance, and, sure. You know, if the conditions were right.
He's saying you gotta pay the man, Sega. He wants some more money.
But I think, you know, definitely, like, I'm not going to be doing ports forever. You know, I get a lot of people asking me, like, there's so many games that people would love to see ported, and it's like, well, where do you stop? Because, obviously, you've got all the Sonic series. Then you've got, like, Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, OutRun. You know, there's just so many games that people would be like, oh, this would be great to have, like, with proper widescreen presentation and all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's just not like with emulation where you can just stick a ROM in and it works. Like, a lot of people kind of might think that. Like, the retro engine's just like a super duper emulator or something, but it's not really. Like, we literally have to remake the game, just, like, use the existing graphics and level design and stuff, but we have to reprogram the entire game within the retro engine, which, you know, I've gotten, with Sonic, I've got increasingly proficient at doing it very quickly, and same with Simon. Like, you know, we've got it down to a science with, you know, how we convert Sonic, like, to do Sonic 1.
Yeah.
But, I think, like, if we were, like, if theoretically, if you were going to do like Streets of Rage or Gunstar Heroes or something, it would be like a new experience because you'd have to work out how those games worked, like the code logic.
Sure.
You know, because you don't want it to be like a horrible thing like, you know, like Sonic 1 on the Game Boy Advance, where it was just like, this is a random approximation of what Sonic might be.
Yeah.
you know, you want it to be like... Like, we try to make it as close to one-to-one as possible. I mean, you know, there's some things that have to be different just due to, like, the screen aspect ratio or like, you know, the way the platform works or the engine, to be more specific, I guess. You know, there's a couple of things that we just, like, have to be make it different from the original game. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I don't think... anyone's really complained that, you know, Sonic 1, you know, felt totally different to the original ROM. And I mean, like, to them, I would just say, well, you know, go play the original game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're not trying, like, we try our best to make it authentic, but we are, this is a remaster, so it's going to feel, it's going to have certain aspects that are different, but hopefully not, like, in a bastardized way, like, you know, like the Star Wars remasters where they put, like, random CGI in.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. So, Graham, I think I'm going to let you take the last question.
Okay.
It's always my favorite.
Yeah, this is a fun thing. I think Chris might have forewarned you on this one, actually, off air. It's our shag, marry, kill question. And for those that don't know about it, we ask you what games you'd like to your guilty pleasure game, as it were, for shag. A game that, like, for marry would be one you couldn't live without, basically, like your favorite game of all time, and one that you, like, for kill, you'd wish never existed, basically, one you just love to destroy and make sure it never was in the history of gaming at all. So, Christian, what game would you shag, what game would you marry, and what game would you kill?
Oh, okay, so shag, there's probably, like, quite a few, like, it's hard to choose that one, because there's a lot of legitimately good games that I could pick for that, that may not just, like, have a lot of meat and bones to them. Like, actually, I recently played this old PlayStation game, Ghost in the Shell, and it was made by the developers. I don't know if you're familiar with a game called Jumping Flash.
Yeah.
And it's kind of got a very similar feel to that, but it's a great little game where you're, you know, you're in control of the mech and you can climb up, like, any wall or any surface, and it's kind of like a mix of a shooter and a platform game. And it's got some great animated cutscenes and everything. It's probably, you know, a bit short, but I think... that's probably a good shag game.
Man, I'm so happy you've said that, because going off on a little tangent here, I was really late picking up a PlayStation 1, like really late, super late. I think PlayStation 2 had pretty much died out by the time I got my PlayStation 1, but I was talking to a guy at school about this amazing game I played, Ghost in a Shell, and I was like raving about it, and he's like, dude, that's one of the worst games ever made on the PlayStation. I was like, oh my god, it's so good, I love it. So I'm so glad that someone else actually likes that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a great time with it, so yeah, I think that's a good candidate.
Yeah.
And then, like, marry, I mean, I could say Sonic 3 and Knuckles as a pair, because that's pretty much, like, if I like Sonic as a game, then that pretty much is the game to like, just because it's got the most content of Sonic.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, like, that's fairly standard and maybe a bit boring, considering it's like, yeah, I do Sonic as a job now, so. But yeah, I'll stick with that.
Yeah, cool.
And then kill would be Bubsy 3D, because that game was just utter crap. Like, and I don't know how I forced myself through as a kid to play that. Like,
I don't even remember that game.
Oh, I do.
I think what made me get it was like there was. Like, and you don't even think this when you're younger, like, that they just outright bullshit on their ads. Like, on the box, it said it was, like, rated the sleeper hit of, like, 1996 or something. And that's just, like, it wasn't from any magazine. They just made that shit up and put it on the box.
That's brilliant, yeah.
That's awesome. I think probably one of the reasons why we played so many bad games as a kid, because I think back and wonder, you know, why did I spend so much time on these really shitty games? And I think it's just because that, you know, I didn't have a lot of games growing up. You know, we'd go and rent a game for the weekend at the local video store, and that was literally, like, you know, one of the only games I had to play that wasn't, you know, or that was new to me. So I'd be like, well, I got this shitty game, like, Cuban on the NES. I'm going to be playing this game, like, all weekend long. Yeah. And that's just kind of what it is. With, like, Wizards and Warriors and all that, there's some pretty shitty games, but... So that's kind of, I think, one of the reasons why. Just, you know, you didn't have a lot of games to play, and you would just play those games.
And sometimes you force yourself to actually really like it. Like, I got Rise of the Robots and spent all my pocket money on Rise of the Robots.
Oh, my God. So bad.
Because the graphics looked amazing. And I still think, for its day on the Mega Drive, it did. The graphics were good. But I basically bought it and was, like, so upset. I remember running and crying to my mum about how much I didn't love the game. And she was like, well, just give it a chance. Just, like, go and play it. Take it for what it is. Because I was expecting something like Street Fighter, obviously. Because that's sort of the style of game it's meant to be. But it was so slow and terrible. And you could only be one robot, as far as I remember. Like, in the single player, you could only be one robot. And you had to fight way up. And I never finished it. I kept going to the last boss, almost killing him, and he kept beating me, so I was in tears about that as well. But yeah, I sort of, towards the end of it though, I sort of, like, convinced myself, actually, it's not a bad game because it looks good and it's meant to be slow or something. I had a massive argument with my friend. I was like, yeah, it's meant to be slow, man, and it's cool that you can only choose one person because it makes it harder, it's more of a challenge. And looking back, it's obviously like, it wasn't a good game, what was I doing? But yeah.
That's awesome.
And can I just say, like, Australia in the 90s, like, especially if you're a Sega fan, like, the distribution of their games in Australia was so bad. Like,
yeah,
we didn't get half the games, like, half of the great games that were, like, I think, like, for me, the biggest reason why I went with PlayStation over a Saturn was, like, the games I thought were cool in the magazines were not being sold here. Oh, and so I was just like, well, my parents were like, well, you know, you should get the console that has the most games that you can buy and play. And, you know, you couldn't rent any of the Saturn games from the video store. Like, they had PlayStation and Nintendo.
Yeah.
64. But so it was just, like, in the end... Mum's common sense won out, and it was like, that was a good thing. I mean, it wasn't until later with eBay that I could, like, you know, pick up a secondhand Saturn and track down all the games I hadn't played.
Yeah.
And do it that way, which is probably, like, a better option because it cost a lot less money than it would have back in the day.
Awesome.
But yeah, you just kind of, like, when you have a limited selection like that, you just kind of think, oh, well, this game could be good. It says it's good on the back of the box.
I always wondered why Australia, because I had a friend who lived down in Australia for a while, and he was saying how, yeah, back in the day, you couldn't really get any games out there. I always wondered, because it's not super close, but it's pretty close to Japan and kind of close to America as well, like, two of the biggest areas that sell games.
I think what it is, Australia is considered European territory as far as the region code, and so we have to get whatever stock comes from Europe. And, like, in the case of, like, Dreamcast, for example, that had, like, a terrible launch in Australia because, like, there wasn't a lot of marketing for it, and when the consoles did come here, there was no memory cards available at launch because they'd all been sold in Europe. And so they just had to wait for a shipment. And, like, there was no marketing to say, like, when it would come. It would just be like, oh, you know, when we have them ready.
Oh, man.
So, and, like, I bought a Dreamcast and it was like, oh, I don't have a memory card. I only have Sonic Adventure and a Dreamcast.
So, like,
and I used to just have to leave the console on to, like, record, keep the progress on.
Oh my god.
I can't believe, like, I would never do that now. Like, you know, I was you know, very reluctant to get an Xbox 360 or any of the new games, because like now it's like, does it have something I really want?
Mm.
You know, because now it's like, oh, do I have space in my house for that console?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like all these adult viewpoints that don't come into the equation as a kid.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh,
brilliant. Awesome. Right.
I think that's going to do it for our interview. So thanks again for talking to us there, Christian.
Yeah, and cheers.
If anyone, you know, listening or watching has any further questions for Christian, shoot them to us in the next few minutes or so. And we can try to get it to them. So now let's get into our question of the week. And that was, if you could take any Sega characters from one genre and move them to a completely different genre, what would it be? And this was one that Stephen Frost actually thought up last week. And we had one person on Twitter reply to us. And it was Katie Did, 1097. She said that she would take Shadow the Hedgehog and put him in a Call of Duty style game. So that would be rather interesting, to say the least. So now I want to ask you guys. All right, so think about this question. Do you guys have anything? Because I have my answer picked out, and I think it's a good one. So,
oh man,
yeah. Do you want me to, in the spirit of going with like a really silly idea and trying to make it work?
Go for it.
I got something we could do.
All right.
Okay, so imagine this, DJ Professor K, mm-hmm. has, like, having, like, solved the graffiti problems, has now, like, moved, like, he's changed his radio station, and, like, now he reports on, like, restaurants, and so, like, the objective of the game now is, like, Jet Set Restaurants, and, like, you're like, instead of Rudy's, it's, like, the Foodies, and like you're starting off as like a young kid as a burger flipper in this like restaurant joint, and you've got to like work your way up, and like there's the evil like Whack Donald's corporation that's like moving in on the neighborhood and setting up all these like bad like food chains near your restaurant, and it would just be like mini games like that, like to do with preparing food, kind of like Cooking Mama. And I was thinking, like, you could have, like, cameos from other Sega franchises, like, coming in to eat your food. And, oh, like, no, you could have, like, the guy from Sega Bass Fishing come in with his, like, big trout. And it's like, make me the finest seafood dish. And it's like, yo, I'm going to do some surf and turf, man. And, like, DJ Professor K would, like, have those interludes, like, let's go scratching.
Oh, oh, that is amazing.
That is, yeah.
I don't even want to say
that.
That
should
now.
Be your next game for Sega.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Jet Set Restaurant. I love it. Well, mine's going to sound really stupid now. So.
I can't think of anything. Chris, can you go before me? Because I literally can't think.
Okay. Mine's not going to be nearly as funny or detailed as Christian's. But kind of going back to one of the games I was talking about last week, Shining Force. One of the things that I loved about Shining Force was all the characters in it. So I think it would be really cool to take the characters out of Shining Force and out of like the, you know, the strategy, the turn-based style of genre it was. Maybe move them into like an awesome like 2D beat 'em up game, and you know, you can kind of control any of the multiple characters in that. So that would be kind of fun for me, just because I do love the characters so much. You'd be able to get a little bit more personality of some of the some of the fun things, and it would also be awesome to control like a centaur, like with a lance, I think. So
yeah, that'd be awesome. Oh, I literally can't think of anything now. Oh no.
You suck.
Oh, okay. No, I've just thought of one, which literally off the top of my head. This is going to be rubbish now, actually. like taking the dragons from like Panzer Dragoon and having them in like an Echo the Dolphin style game. So like, could be a 2D game, I guess. And like, I don't know. That's not going to work. That's what I can think of. I was just imagining the dolphin being the dragon, and yeah, no. Sorry. I think Christian won that one.
I think, well, it's no fair. He's a developer.
I don't know.
So, okay. All right. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We had some internet connection issues. Totally my fault on my end, and that kind of killed the whole broadcast. But we're back again. We're going to quickly wrap up the show with Christian. But before we do want to ask and allow Christian to throw out his question of the week. So I think he's got that ready for us. What do you have, Christian?
All right. So I was thinking in the spirit of ports, which modern Sega game would you take and port to the Atari 2600?
Oh my god. So like a backwards port.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Wow. So, yeah, good one to think about actually. Well, what about
and,
going
bonus
what about backwards
points
porting
if it's actually
Megatron
technically or feasible?
Oh, right, yeah. what would you say to backwards porting it to the Mega Drive, though, rather than the Atari? Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's probably more reasonable, but
I was thinking yeah, keeping it Sega. All right,
let's go with that. Like, we're not totally masochistic.
Yeah. if no one say Atari, that's fine. That's cool, yeah. Just, yeah, awesome. yeah, I think you're keeping it Sega nerd related. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So that,
awesome.
There you go, guys.
All right. Yeah, so start thinking about that. And the one that's actually the one, I guess, that we all vote on to be the best one, Christian, you're going to actually demake that game and release it on the Genesis, right?
Or I reckon that's a job for Simon, because he's like, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but he is very good with programming on the Mega Drive and the Mega CD.
Oh yeah.
So it's a pity they haven't made any like new FMV like Sega games this year that he can downport like downscale. Maybe he can like downscale like the Sega nerds nerdcasts onto like Sega CD video.
Oh god, that'd be terrible. Awesome. That'd be great. So awesome. Yeah. All right, I think that's going to do it for the show this week then. So everyone think of that question, get it to us early, and we'll get them all ready for next week. Christian, thanks again for coming on the show this week. Like I said before, we had wanted you to bring you on to the show for a very long time. We're big fans of all the work that you've done with the Sonic franchise, and we're really grateful what you have done with it and bringing it to some of the mobile devices. So thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Awesome. We'll have to have you on again. Maybe when whatever you're currently working on, we have no idea what it is, but maybe when whatever it is, yeah, comes out, we can talk about it some more. So,
shame you for the iPhone. Fantastic. Like to hear it. Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. I'll talk to you later. And that's going to do it for us. So,
yep. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
ルービーやってみるよ。ファーシストスティック。頑張って。We have everything you need to live the young, hip, jet-grind radio lifestyle. You skate, you groove, you bomb bricks, and run from the man.